You are listening to TLRStation.com.
Your Family Matters is a talk radio program with expert information about family law issues and various dispute resolution practices and other services concerning the law and how it relates to your family. Because your family matters. Host Cindy Morin is a family law lawyer with Resolve Legal Group, a family law firm dedicated to client-centered holistic legal services with offices located downtown Calgary and downtown Cochrane, Alberta. And now, here is your host, Cindy Morin.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Tenacious Living's radio talk show, Your Family Matters. Today, my guests are Bev Nodrick from the Step Family Foundation and Tess Jones, who is a family lawyer and mediator with Resolve Legal Group. So thank you both for coming in today. Bev, I want to start with you because I'd like you to tell us a bit about what is the Step Family Foundation of Alberta.
Okay, thank you for having me today. This is exciting. The Step Family Foundation is a not-for-profit that my husband, Dr. Nodrick, and I started in 1999. We took some courses through Jeanette Lofus of the Step Family Foundation of New York, and we were in private practice together, and we thought we've had many, many people coming to our door that are going through divorces, step families, living together, all of those things, and it just was a fit at that time. We have specialized courses for step families and counseling for step families, and our goal is to help step families succeed.
Right. I mean, I think it goes without saying there are a lot of step families out there because there are unfortunately a lot of divorces and people, you know, having second opportunities with second relationships, and then they're commingling kids and everything else. So kudos to you for recognizing that there's a need in this area and for you and your husband to start the Step Family Foundation. So could you define for us what is a step family?
A step family is where two people coming together in a union relationship and at least one of the people has kids of their own.
Okay. And so why do they need specialized services?
It is so complex. You know, a lot of people believe, or culturally they believe, that biological families are the only kind of families to have. And we have grown up in a society that says that. Even myself, as a child, my mom and dad separated in the late 50s.
Yeah.
And I grew up in a step family for a very short period of time. My mom was a single parent for a long, long time, never remarried. And when I got married, my ideal was that biological family. That's the way it should be, even though I'd had many years of growing up in a situation where it wasn't that biological family. And we think we have to put the step family into the biological mold. There's not a roadmap out there for people,
right?
A lot of people. And what they need is to see how they can move on into the situation and to get tools and techniques to make the step family happen and be able to see that it's the situation. It's not the people. It's the situation. Once they have a roadmap and know where they have to go or how to talk through things, they have a better chance of success, a much better chance of success.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that I see in my practice when I'm talking to clients and, you know, when they've had, you know, even a failed second marriage, one of the things I'll say to them is, you know, what do you think went wrong there? And they'll say things like, well, you know, it was my partner's kids. They caused problems and rifts. And I don't really think that kids cause problems and rifts. I think it's the way the adults handle situations that can cause those problems and rifts. And that's why I think, you know, what you guys are doing is a very worthwhile endeavor, because people have different attitudes about what constitutes a family and what a family should look like. And if they're not talking about those things and they get into a relationship, that can sometimes cause some conflict. So, for instance, you know, one party may think, well, my kids from that biological family, as you said, are my kids, and your kids from your bio family are your kids. And yes, we're going to live together, but we're not going to necessarily blend those two worlds together. And others will take the attitude that if your kids are living with us and my kids are living with us, or even whether it be part-time or full-time, they are our children, and we have this extension of other, of a bigger other family. And that's a much different attitude than people who want to keep those two bio families separate. So I think it's important to talk about that and get some skills to learn, how do we create our new family and set it up so that it is a success as opposed to a failure. So with that in mind, what do you mean when, people talk about step family dynamics?
Well, what happens again, just like you've said, many people come in with expectations. And usually at the beginning of a step-family relationship, there are two families under one roof. And it takes at least 2 years to get some of this stuff happening so it looks more like a family. And there are developmental stages to it. Right. Just like as human beings, we have developmental stages. A biological family has a developmental stage, and a step-family has a developmental stage. So that's so important, because once you master some of the tasks that you need to move on to the next stage, when you get the tools and techniques, you move on to the next stage and you're able to work at the issues that do come up. It gives you a roadmap. So that's one of the things that's really, really important. The courses that we teach are very structured. So there's homework. They have to do all the homework, come back, talk about it, look where they are and what they're needing. And 'cause even though many of the issues are very much the same, each family, again, is individual, and you have to do that. Another one of the dynamics is called the collision course. And, again, expectations. A woman coming in with kids of her own, and her partner has kids, she's thinking just us, which means me, my partner, and my kids. There's not always room for the other kids.
Right.
Right? The fellow is coming in as the white knight, thinking, oh, we're going to all be this big, happy family, and we'll get along, and this will heal some of the hurts of the past and prove that I'm a good person, a good partner, and a good parent. And then the kids, they're thinking eternal wish. And I don't know if you guys know about the eternal wish. It's they want their parents back together.
Oh, yes, the eternal wish.
Yes.
Well, we don't call it that, but we're very yes. cognizant of
oh,
that.
Oh, yes. And the thing with that is, for the most part, if they have a good relationship with their step-parent, it's not that they want their step-parent to go, because I do some work with the young kids, too. And usually they say, I'll say, well, what will happen to stepmom or stepdad? Well, they'll just come live with us. Because they still have that relationship with that person. They don't want them to go, but it would be easier on the children. And if you think about it, I don't know if you've ever tried to pack up every week, right, to go to someone's house, and you've forgotten this or that or the other thing. It's very, very hard on the kids. Sometimes I suggest to people, maybe try packing up your stuff every week and seeing what it's like for the kids,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
But also, too, kids need at least 40% time with each parent to have any kind of a relationship with them.
Yeah.
So it is difficult, you know, depending on the age of the kids, depending on the age of the parents, depending on where the stepfamily's at, to get some of these things together. So it is a collision course.
Right. Now, what would you say are the top issues that come up for stepfamilies?
There's many issues, but the top three that come up again and again and again are certainly around kids. Discipline, rules, chores.
Parenting styles.
Exactly. That's one of them. And second one is prior spouses. We call them prior spouses, not ex-spouses. It's a big one. It's a really, really big one. And then money and finances.
Right.
So we do delve into these things, but the money and finances, I'm not a financial guru, whatever. So there's some ideas, some thoughts about getting wills, putting things in place, how to protect the kids, all those things.
Well, and I think that's a good segue over to you, Tess, because there are many legal implications that occur when families are blending together, and certainly around property and kids and all the rest of it. So let's talk a little bit about property. Obviously, I'm talking in general terms where there's spouses that are coming together and they've had prior families. What sort of things should clients be thinking about when they're recoupling with somebody in a subsequent relationship?
Well, generally speaking, when two people have both been in previous relationships, they come in with a certain number of assets. It's not like a young couple starting out where they may both come into the relationship with very little. They may both come in with significant assets from having separate homes, having separate vehicles, having separate bank accounts, separate retirement savings, pensions, insurance, and they may have, in some cases, fairly significant assets. Now, some people will choose to jump in with both feet, I guess, and say what's yours is mine and mine is yours, just as they would when they often do in a first marriage. But some people come in a little more cautious, and they want to protect their assets in the event that this current relationship should end. So what's a very prudent idea, generally speaking, is to for each person to contemplate having a prenuptial agreement drafted so that before they enter into a cohabitation relationship or a marriage, a second marriage, third marriage, whatever the case may be, they talk about how they want to manage their property so that both parties have a clear understanding, and they can put that in the form of a contract of some sort, right, that sets out ahead of time how things will happen in the event that the relationship doesn't succeed.
Well, and I think that's important, because when you just jump into a relationship and say, well, what's mine is mine and what's yours is yours, if that relationship ends, that may not be the case unless you actually have it in writing. So a cohab agreement or a prenup agreement is always a good idea. I don't care what relationship it is, whether it's 1, 2, 3, 4 or Elizabeth Taylor's. You need to have that in place, because it will save you. Well, it's like basic estate planning. Everybody plans, well, not everybody, but everybody should plan, do an estate plan in the unlikely event of death.
The inevitability
of death. That's right. And nobody gets married, you know, hoping that they're going to, or thinking that their marriage is going to end. But you should plan for it. I mean, you know, you don't expect to be in a car accident either, but you're going to wear a safety belt.
And you're going to buy insurance.
That's right. So that's exactly what this is. And it's being proactive, and it saves you a lot of money down the road if things don't work out. And it also gets that conversation started, where both parties can then say, you know, well, what do we think about our property commingling? Mm-hmm. And what do we think about what should we leave to our children from our first marriage, as opposed to all of our children commingled together? And what should that look like? Mm-hmm. And a meeting of the minds, which I think when you do a cohab agreement or a prenup agreement, it sets the stage for how that relationship is going to look like, and everybody's on the same page, and would probably make your job, Bev, a lot easier, because they've already had some of those hard conversations. And they are hard conversations to have, but they're necessary. Mm-hmm. I think they're necessary.
Certainly. I do stress that when people do come in, you know, if they haven't done this, they should be doing it and looking at it. But I think there's that romantical idea, especially when you put a prenup or something, right, with people. The women usually will, no way. But I do agree, as I'm aging more and more, that it would have been a good idea.
Well, and it's funny, because I teach courses at Chinook College and some other ones for the Calgary Counseling Center, and around Valentine's Day every year, I like to teach a course on prenups, and I call them a gift of love because they really are. They're not about, you know, well, I'm going to keep everything and leave you with nothing. They're about what are we going to do to make sure that both of us are going to be okay in the event that we don't work out. Mm-hmm. And it's really about caring about your other partner. No, it's not romantic to have those hard conversations, but it's very loving to have those conversations and put that plan in place together before you go down that path.
It's also potentially cost-effective.
Very cost-effective.
As well, because if you have a roadmap to what's going to happen if your relationship fails, you're not going to be spending money on lawyers and going to court and arguing over those things at the end of the day. I mean, sometimes that's unavoidable in any event.
Yeah.
But if you have a well-drafted contract, a prenup or a cohab agreement, then it often is money well spent.
Absolutely. Now, speaking of kids, there's also some legal implications that can occur that a lot of people are unaware of. By the time they come to visit Tess or I, when they're separating and divorcing and they're on a second marriage and we say, well, you know, you may be on the hook for this, they're quite shocked to learn, because nobody ever tells them at the outset, that you can actually be what's referred to as in loco parentis. And I'm going to let Tess explain what that means.
Well, you know, I think Bev was saying earlier, and Cindy was mentioning earlier, that some people go into a second relationship with children from prior relationships, thinking mine is mine and yours is yours, and they choose not to commingle them a lot. But if your family is one where you go into the relationship thinking these are all our children, yours, mine, and ours, then just like any other parent, step-parents can incur certain rights and responsibilities. So in loco parentis essentially means that you're standing in the place of a parent. It's a Latin term that essentially boils down to that. Now, in order to determine whether you're standing in loco parentis, things that are taken into consideration are things such as how involved were you with those children? How much time did you devote to the care of the children? Were you essentially like a second mother to them? For instance, you put them to bed, you bathed them, you took them to dance lessons and hockey lessons, you participated in parent-teacher interviews, things like that. What people don't understand is there is some benefit to a relationship like that with your spouse's children. If you have a relationship that fails and you don't want to lose a relationship with those children, it can be to your benefit that you've had that such a close relationship, because you may well want to continue that relationship. And if your spouse is not supportive of a continued relationship, if you have a particularly nasty breakup, you could apply for contact with those children, and the court would look at the type of relationship you had with them beforehand. Similarly, however, people are often surprised to learn that if they don't continue to have a relationship with those children after the separation, notwithstanding that, they may be liable for paying child support for children who aren't their biological children, but who are the children of their former spouse.
And I think it's also important to note that you may be obligated to pay child support for your stepchildren, even if they have a bio parent who is also paying child support. Now, it's not a double dip. It sometimes is just a top up, but it can vary depending on the facts of each situation.
Absolutely. Yeah. No.
And that being said, There's also your obligations that you have to the first marriage as well in terms of support. Tess, you want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, yeah, if it's been a marriage where it's been of some duration and both party or one party, usually the wife, but not always, has been a stay-at-home mother, and after some years the parties separate and the husband is a much higher income earner and the wife has lost some opportunities, whether they be educational or job opportunities, promotions, advancement in their field because they took a period of time off to care for the kids, then the husband often, but not necessarily, whoever the partner was who stayed at home is likely going to be entitled to some support from their former spouse. And that's what we term spousal support or partner support if they were in a cohabitational relationship and never actually married. That doesn't negate someone's obligation to pay their former partner support in those sorts of circumstances.
So essentially, in a worst case scenario, you may be, or best case, depending on which side of the coin you're on, I guess, you could be responsible for paying child support for two sets of families and partner support for two sets of families.
That's absolutely right.
Yeah. So that's why I think it's important to plan well in advance so that you know what your rights and responsibilities are to the second family as well as to your first family, and put an agreement in place so that your family, should it break down the second time around, it will be restructured in a very healthy and least amount of conflict by having that roadmap available to you at the get-go. Now, Bev, do you guys do any work at all if a relationship does breakdown, and Tess was mentioning earlier, sometimes that step-parent wants to continue a relationship with their stepchildren, despite the fact that their spouse is no longer with them. Do you do any work around that where you help maintain those relationships?
Not so far, but usually what I do say to people, you know, when they're doing wills and finding out all the legal stuff, I will say to them, you know, you can put in the will, or your spouse beforehand can put in the will that there's a close relationship with the children, and to have it written down because the judge may look at that and still keep that relationship happening. So I usually send them off to find out legally what they can do. And so far, I've not had anyone come back to do more counseling around that. But I tell them that's a legal thing. You have to go and see what legally you can have done around seeing children after.
Well, and I think that's a good point, too, is not just looking at cohabs and prenups, but also looking at wills. I say this all the time. The two most important documents you'll ever sign in your life is your will and your prenup or cohab. And it's very true. You know, lawyers need to take extra special care in preparing either one of those documents because one is speaking from the grave and one with the other with the prenup or cohab, you have to look far into the future, right? So oftentimes, you know, when people come visit me at my office and they want to put together a cohab or a prenup, they're like, well, neither one of us wants support from the other, and each one of us is going to keep all of our own property. And I say, okay, well, fair enough if that's what you want. But what happens if you guys are together for 20 years and your spouse is disabled and is in need of support, but you guys aren't going to continue your relationship? You still love each other, but for due to circumstances, you decide to split up. You know, do you still say, I don't get support from her, she doesn't get support from me, and walk away? Or does it look a little different? So you've got to be thinking about all of the different scenarios. Or if one says, we're going to divide everything equally, we're going to share in everything, and then I say, okay, and what do you do if 10 years from now you learn that your partner's had an affair? What does that look like? So you have to contemplate all different mm-hmm. circumstances, much like you would have to do with a will. And you don't think of those things usually when you're going into a relationship because you're just excited about the relationship. You're in love. Love is blind, right? So, you've got to think of those things. And God forbid, nobody wants to think of their partner, having an affair or being ill or what have you. But it is something that you need to think about when drafting those.
Well, also, too, if your partner does die and you've become very close to the kids and the kids are close to you and maybe bio mom is not wanting you to be in there, to be able to have maybe something set up or written in there that there would be some possibility. And yes. Again, I don't know the legal parts of that, and that's something I would really like to find out.
Well, let me give you our card. No,
yes.
I mean, if you've got a relationship with the children and you're not a guardian of that child, there are still ways if you've had a relationship. I mean, the courts are always going to do what's in the best interest of the mm-hmm. children. And if it's in the best interest of the children to maintain a relationship with that step parent, the courts are likely to have that relationship continue. But what that looks like is dependent on the facts of each individual case. Yes. So I just want to ask you, Bev, I noticed on your website that there were some questions that people had put in there for your organization. And one question that came up was, is my plan to blend our families potentially damaging to my children? What do you say to somebody who has that question?
That's such a good question. It really is, because there's the fear that is this going to damage kids? And a lot of people say that kids that come from a divorce separated situation sometimes have lower grades in school, have more emotional problems, social problems, all of those things. The thing that's really utmost, if the parents, the adults in the situation do the job they have to do by parenting, looking after the kids, kids will do okay. If there's not that baggage back and forth, the bad mouthing that the mom and dad might have. And I don't know if you guys have heard about bad mouthing or not, but that is so detrimental,
never.
Right?
No.
Hello, we're lawyers.
Yes.
Well, we've heard the bad mouthing.
Yeah. But the thing that's really hard here on the kids is that a child is both of the parents, right? Part mom, part dad. Mm-hmm. And what happens is if dad says something bad about mom, that part of the child that's mom is thinking, oh, that doesn't make me feel good. Maybe I'm no good there. And then if mom says the same thing or other things about dad, the child thinks, well, that part of me is not very good either. So in the end, I'm no good. Their self-esteem is destroyed.
Yeah.
What parents have to hear again and again, and this is one of the biggest reasons that we do the job we do, because kids need to see good relationships. They need to see that parents can fight or adults can fight, but they need to figure it out. And how they figure it out, what are kids learning about relationships and commitments, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's so important. The adults need to do the adult stuff. They don't need to use their kids as a confidant.
Yeah.
Kids don't need to be parentified. They need to be kids. Let them do their job, right? Kids will do okay if the adults do their job that they have to. And I stress that again and again and again. And I say to many of my couples coming in, if you have done this at all around, bio mom or bio dad or whatever, I just say, go and sit with your kids and say, you're very, very sorry for doing that. And you will try your utmost never to do that again.
Yeah.
Your mom loves you. I love you, whatever, or your dad loves you and I love you.
Well, and I think too, when you're blending a family and you're making it one new family, I like the premise of all the parties involved are an extended family and you're all working together. And you may not necessarily like everybody within your family. I mean, even siblings may not like another sibling.
Yeah, in biologic family.
Exactly. Yeah. But you all got to work together as a unit and you're a team and this is your family. This is what you got and you work it out. And, I think if kids, like you were saying, it's important to model good relationships, and it's not always easy to do that. It's not always easy for parents to do their job. Mm-hmm. But if kids see that, yes, issues arise, but how we deal with those issues can be worked through in a healthy way, mm-hmm. they're going to be much better off because of it. And there's tons of research around that.
Oh, definitely, definitely. But the thing that's important here, too, is the couple – the couple is at the top. The couple has to decide on how they're going to do things and bring everything together. The couple is the team, and then the kids and stuff working it out.
Okay. And I noticed that we're out of time, but I do have just one quick question I want to ask you, and that is another one that I've seen on your website where people have asked, how reasonable is it for anyone to assume that we will come to love our partner's children in the same way that we love our own children?
It's a big expectation, very big expectation of people, and sometimes it isn't stated, but you feel it. There's many kinds of love out there. And you may not love your partner's children the same way. And in lots of ways, how can you? Your children are biologically bound to you by blood. And that's okay. Even in a biological family, you don't love all your kids the same way. They're different.
If my children are listening, I love you all the same. And I try to make the pies equally cut.
No, but yeah, there's many ways of loving kids and being respectful, having a respectful relationship. But that expectation sometimes for people is so hard because how do you fulfill it? Or do you feel guilty because you don't?
Right.
But finding out the interest of each child and having a relationship that way with them, finding out what a child is interested in and do more of that with them, and you will have at least a respectful relationship.
Well, that's great. So we are out of time, and I want to thank both Bev and Tess for being part of our show today. If you want to find out more about the Step Family Foundation of Alberta, Bev, how do they contact you?
Go to our website, stepfamily.ca.
Okay.
That will, and we've got lots of information, tools, articles written on there.
Perfect. Or if you want to find out more about getting a will done or a prenup or cohabs, those most important documents ever.
Of your life.
Be sure to call Tess at our firm, Resolve Legal Group. And Tess, what is your number?
403-229-2365.
Okay. And or you can also look you up on our website, which is www.resolvelegalgroup.com, or you can call our general number at 1-866-RESOLVE and ask for Tess or any one of our other lawyers at the firm that would be happy to help you with drafting those important documents. So thank you, ladies.
Thank you very much.
Your Family Matters is sponsored by Resolve Legal Group, a family law firm dedicated to client-centered holistic legal services, with offices located downtown Calgary and downtown Cochrane, Alberta. The unique delivery of client-centered holistic services that Resolve Legal Group has become known for is structured to address not only a client's legal matter, but this model also ensures that families are bridged with differing community supports based on an individual's and family needs. It is the firm's philosophy that with the right supports in place, clients become empowered to make sound legal decisions when files are led to resolution. It is the firm's desire to continue to grow and expand this model so that holistic practice becomes the norm in family law rather than the exception. Contact us at 403-229-2365 or visit www.resolvelegalgroup.com for more information.